Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Okay, Conan, so we know seven of the teams in the quarterfinals in Dublin. That's where we're going to start. We don't know the eighth because Raheny had a positive test. So the game against Plunkett yesterday was pulled off the television. And we saw Kilmacoe Crokes against Castleknock instead. We'll get to that in a second. Skerry's Harps, true. Great stuff for Skerry's Harps. I'm on the Skerry's Harps bandwagon. Might be a step up in the quarterfinals for you. I don't know, Conan. A lot of big teams gone through. Ballymunkickhams, St. Jude's, Nafina, Ballyboden, Vincent's. Like, I mean, when's the draw for that? Like, I mean, there's no easy game left in it. You'd be looking maybe at Raheny potentially if they beat Plunkett's as the best draw, no?
Well, the draw was made last night, and St. Jude's, yeah. So I suppose this is the part now where I just play it down and say we're just really happy to be there. And St. Jude's will be favourites.
How did I miss that? Any of the big teams draw each other? They must have.
Ballymun and Nafina sort of stands out. Right. Vincent's and Crokes, but Vincent's aren't really the same team they were. And like, it's funny you're talking about Raheny. Obviously, they still have a chance to get through to the quarterfinals, but what's awaiting them is Ballyboden, so it's not as appetising anymore. Like, you know, the thought of getting through to the last eight.
Yeah, you mentioned Vincent's being through. Like, I mean, they hammered Clontarf. They look decent. Like, I mean, I saw highlights of this. The only problem for them is Dermot Connolly went off with a hamstring injury. He was icing it on the bench after that. So, like, I mean, without Connolly, they'd have no chance there.
I don't think so. Like, the only thing, I don't know, we'll probably talk about Connolly's magic, but, like, that was sort of what I think of Vincent's all the time. You know, they just turn somebody over. They have a high press. And it was Chris Barrett who lost the ball. And then it's just turned over and goal. Like, they're the most ruthless team that I've come across. And if they still have that edge, then a mistake, you know, could cost the team. I remember Ballymun just gave the ball away in one of those finals they played in. And bang, goal. And that's how the game was decided a couple of years ago. They just punish every single mistake.
Yeah. Like, I saw on The Independent the headline about Connolly's sublime pass. And I saw it on the Hogan stand. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, I've seen that man give some brilliant passes. This was well down the list of it. And if you want to go on about brilliant passes, Philly McMahon gave a better pass to Dean Rock on the run off the outside of his boot over a defender's head for, I think it was only a Dean Rock point. But at the same time, we saw some unbelievable passes in the Castleknock and Kilmacud game. Yeah. Shane Boland, like, some sensational balls. I think when you have a reputation for being a good passer, people go to town on some of these passes because the GAA tweeted out Connolly's pass and you have different people saying, what a genius. Holy shit, off the inside of his boot from a standing position. Like, you know what I mean? That was nothing special.
Like, I actually agree with you. I saw it, and like, I think Dermot Connolly would nearly be a bit embarrassed to hear people talking like that.
Because I agree.
It's a 25-meter pass. It went over one man's head. Like, what? He took one man out of it. Like, how many times have we seen him take two, three, four men out of it?
Yeah.
As you say, he can do. He's done far more. I think that was a 6 out of 10 pass for him. A really nice pass that sort of set them on their way for a goal, but nothing hard for him.
Yeah, routine pass. The one thing that was most surprising in that clip was Mossy Quinn was the one who dispossessed Barrett. There was some sensational hassling for him. Something Mossy Quinn's never been really known for. What was he doing out there and why was he working so hard? That's what I want to know.
Part of me thought he got a bit lucky. He was just swinging his arms and then it looked like Barrett was free and then one fist seemed to catch the ball and it just slipped out. I'd say he was about to just give up on the tackle at that stage.
So a lot of new faces in the Vincent's team, all right. That, like, I mean, they have Sean Lowry and Greg Murphy in the full forward line. Two young lads, not imported. They scored 1-2 and a very good goal from Lowry. You know, two new wing backs that I wouldn't have known too much about. So they definitely seem to be in a rebuilding phase. Our own Ger Brennan came on in the 50th minute. He's getting like Conor McGregor, this Brennan fella now. You can't trust his retirements at all.
Yeah, when you see him and Eamon Fennell and stuff like striding around, you're thinking, Jesus, like how long can this go on? Like the only thing with Connolly's injuries, they've got 2 weeks before they're back out again against Kilmacud Crook. So, you know, if he gets patched up, everything's still going through him. You still have Mossy Quinn ripping it up. So you can't really rule out Vincent's either. But
no, I wouldn't rule out Vincent's. Like, I mean, I'm never overly impressed with Kilmacud Crokes when I see them. Like, Castleknock were the better team as far as I could see yesterday. They kicked it away with a lot of wides. They were 1-2 to no score down. And after that, then, they were by far the better team in the for the rest of the first half. Like, I mean, Kilkenny gave a masterclass, destroyed Keane O'Sullivan, who looks completely out of sorts. I think Kilkenny had 3 points in the first 8 minutes after going 1-2 to no score down. Like, I mean, I don't know what your take on the game was, but for me, I thought Castleknock deserved to win the game.
No, like, I think Castleknock definitely dominated the match. And like you mentioned Shane Boland, he was brilliant. Like, I actually felt sorry on him at the start. He cut two marks and we missed both of them because of replays being shown on the TV. And the commentator just said that Shane Boland had caught it. But Tommy McDaniel inside was destroying the cornerback. Like, he was just a ball-winning machine. The only thing about Kilmacud Crokes is I think they were already through anyway, but they also just have these options. Like, you mentioned Kieran Kilkenny, he had 4 points in 15 minutes, but in the second half, they moved Andy McGowan on him, and then that did really silence him. And it's just, they have that ability. Like, if it's Keane O'Sullivan or Rory O'Carroll or Andy McGowan, that's just in defence. They can move these people around and rejig their team. And I think Castleknock didn't score for the last 10 minutes, you know, when they really should have, and they're like Kilmacud were down to 14 men. And it's just that press as well that they put on. It's just so, they're so strong and agile, every one of them, that they put you under a lot of pressure and teams seem to tire against them.
Yeah, well, I thought, like, because the last I'd heard of Castleknock when they got to the county final that year is that they were a very defensive team. I saw them, they were a very, very defensive team. They've abandoned those tactics now. Like, I mean, they weren't dropping men back behind the ball, you know, not that many. They were pressing up high as well. So, like, I mean, it was a decent game to watch, even though it was pretty low scoring. Like, I mean, poor Keane O'Sullivan looks a shadow of the player that he was. Like, I mean, you mentioned McGowan tying up Kilkenny, and he did, but he followed him everywhere. And Keane O'Sullivan didn't know whether to follow Kilkenny, whether to drop. Then he made a few forays up the field, ended up over carrying and picking the ball up off the ground. And Jesus Christ, the poor man didn't know whether he was coming or going, did he? It was unusual to see him so poor.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the Kilkenny thing in the first 15 minutes, first half especially. It was hard because he was going so deep and picking up ball and then ghosting into space. But it's Kieran Kilkenny. You know he's going to be really dangerous, so surely you should have somebody tagging him. So I started thinking, yeah, even if Kieran Sullivan's playing centre-back and he wants to hold that fort, it's more important to go after Kilkenny. And that's a bad defensive job if you're letting him off and just trying to hold the 45, because the team is going to look for Kilkenny again at some stage, and it's better to follow him.
It's brain dead, really. At club level, for Castleknock, keep Kieran Kilkenny quiet, and you've you know what I mean, man-mark him. There's no logic to him playing centre-forward and let him forage without following him. There's no logic to it at all. I thought it's Seamus O'Carroll, the Limerick player, had an absolute nightmare in the first half. God almighty, nothing went right for him. And then he went in full forward in the second half and he had a really good game. He looked dangerous, capable of doing the odd stupid thing, but has an awful lot of pace. Did you notice Kilkenny going mad with him at one stage because O'Carroll didn't offload a pass to Kilkenny as he's running past him, no?
Is that the time?
Well, it's Carroll's first pint.
Yes, because I remember Kilkenny sort of taking a little huff and just turning away, and then the ball ended up going over the bar. And I was dying to see the clip of Kilkenny then. Did he say well done, or, you know, did his cough soften or anything like that? Because he scored a point.
Yeah, he scored a brilliant point. And, like, Kilkenny wasn't throwing goals. Kilkenny, if anything, it wasn't the ball to give Kilkenny. He was on the outside of him. There was no way throwing goals. And I was surprised because Kilkenny kind of shouted, like, what the fuck? I don't know. You know, he shouted something expletive. And that would have put O'Carroll off. Like, it wasn't a very nice thing to do to a teammate. And you would never have seen Kilkenny doing that with Dublin. So I was just surprised. And then O'Carroll got another point and kind of came into the game a little bit. So, like, I mean, I was interested to see him. Mickey Mullen had a brilliant block at the end. This is a proper no-nonsense cornerback, Mickey Mullen. He had been trash-talking O'Carroll before that. He'd gone around with a moustache and a mullet. There's no mess, no forays up the field by Mickey Mullen. Mickey Mullen is just a proper old-school cornerback.
Yeah, but he was struggling in the first half with McDaniel, but, like, he really, when he needed him, like, it was McDaniel he blocked for that goal chance at the very end. So he came to grips. He definitely looks like a throwback. Like, we watched a lot of those games here in lockdown. He wouldn't be out of place in the 90s just playing with that mullet.
Yeah, so I'd say that's probably, yeah, Ballymun and Athena. You'd imagine Ballymun could end up running out easy winners in that one. Kilmacud and Vincent's probably the most 50-50 for me. Now, you're our Dublin club football correspondent, so, like, I mean, I'll take your opinion over my one on that. So you think Kilmacud will take Vincent's?
Just about. I'm always reluctant to rule out Vincent's, but ever since was it Ballyboden that hammered him in the group stage there, I've just started rethinking things about them.
Yeah, exactly. So the hurling on TV was Loughmore Castellini versus Kilruane McDonagh's. And I was starting to lose a bit of interest in this. Loughmore Castellini went 8 points up at one stage. Evan Sweeney was in great form. He is 36 years old, playing for 20 years. He was wearing number 21. He scored 2-3. His second goal was absolute, a brilliant goal. And then their goalkeeper made a balls of two goals, and suddenly Kilruane are back in it. And suddenly there's a grandstand finish. And, it needed some great bit of defending towards the end, and a brilliant free that Evan Sweeney won himself, you know, to get that extra score, that insurance score, to kind of push it out to two, and they could relax a little bit, Colin.
Yeah, like, you talk about, people overhyping Jim McConnelly's pass. Was it the second mistake, the high ball in? I think it was Willie Cleary who tries to catch it, and he just dropped the ball and it went in, and the commentators were creaming themselves. And I thought, oh my God, what have I missed? I thought he might have flicked it in with his hands, and he just tried to catch it and it dropped into the net. Like, you know, and out of nowhere, Loughmore Castellini were just hanging on to this match. And, like, it's interesting. I didn't realize that Evan Sweeney was 36, because you see that second goal where he drops his shoulder and goes left.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a teenager just bursting onto the scene, a corner forward. It was something else from a 36-year-old to have that turn of pace still.
2 years ago, I was reading in some cup game in Tipperary, he started in goals because their goalkeeper was injured. So he played in goals, and the game went to extra time, and he came out of goals and went up in the forwards in extra time and scored four points for play. Like, I mean, this lad's a club legend. He played for Tip back in the early noughties. He got a chance, but never really fully made it. But this was the best one I heard in a long time. So I was listening to the interviews after this. Evan Sweeney was interviewed, nothing special in that one. Then Frankie McGrath, the Loughmore Castellini manager, was interviewed. He's the Tree McGrath's uncle. So he had a quote here, and I was nearly knocked off my sofa when I was listening to this. So he says, this is almost like this is some huge insight into something that he'd heard, some incredibly interesting, you know, theory on Gaelic games. And he says, every game takes on a life of its own. It's a saying I heard from a good friend of mine down in Rathdowney, John Delaney. He hurled with Laois for years. And, like, John would be of the opinion, every game takes on a life of its own. That's one of the most worn out GA cliches I've ever heard. He's never heard a Brian Cody interview if Frankie McGrath is coming to us with every game takes on a life of its own. Like, it's some sort of profound kind of, you know, incredible quote from John Delaney, who hurled from Laois years ago.
Yeah, I love that he's crediting a friend in Laois for coming up.
Heard this now, a good one. You might not heard this now. He's of a strong belief that every game takes on a life of its own.
I saw this quote in your production notes, and I was like, "Oh, what are we talking about this for?" Like, I thought you were actually thinking this was a good quote, so I'm happy you're taking the piss out of it.
an absolute classic. So, sticking on the hurling team, Austin Gleeson was sent off again. Mount Sion beat De La Salle. That was a huge win for them. They haven't won it in a long time, and De La Salle would have been favourites to win that. So he was sent off on a straight red last weekend in the last game, and he got off that. Apparently, luckily enough, because he was sent off, I think it was only after 2 minutes he got sent off in the last round. Now, this was two very debatable yellow cards, according to Stephen O'Keefe, who's his Waterford teammates, and obviously Ballygunner player, and they're in the semi-final, and now Mount Sion are in the semi-final. And Stephen O'Keefe says, as a neutral, very soft cards. I wonder if it wasn't Austin Gleeson, would they have been yellows? So, like, I mean, apparently harshly sent off, threw the hurl into the dugout, Austin Gleeson. So, like, I mean, very frustrated. You don't know whether to feel sorry for these fellas, or they're being targeted, or, you know, like, I mean, then again, if you look at it the other way, he's just got off a red card. So, you know, don't be putting yourself in any danger.
Can you tell me the logic behind that, though? Like, you know, why would Gleeson be targeted? Because I would always be of the opinion that the county players get away with more at club level because the refs, they like them and they look up to them. And, you know, I would think if somebody was refereeing an Austin Gleeson match, it would be very kind to Austin Gleeson.
Yeah, it depends on the character. I would put maybe Joe Canning or somebody, or Shamie Callanan, into that category. But yeah, Austin Gleeson can be bowled a little bit on the field at times, and maybe referees kind of watch him and might take pleasure in sending him out. There, you know what I mean? There's two sides to that. I've definitely had referees who would take pleasure in giving you a yellow card, you know what I mean? Or getting on to you. They will get a kick out of it. I think that definitely happens. Lismore 2-22 against Abbeyside 3-11. Lismore into the semi-final. Maurice Shanahan only won 11 this time for Morris. Very disappointed with his return. 1-4 from play. You know, like, I mean, this is incredible. Lismore, they've played three games in the championship. They've scored 10 goals, 62 points in three games. Shanahan has scored 338 of that. And we have analysed Maurice Shanahan last week about, is he going to get back in? Who knows? But, like, I mean, 338 in three championship matches, semi-final match now against Ballygunner, who are going for seven in a row. That's going to be the huge test of Maurice Shanahan. If Maurice Shanahan plays well and puts up a big score against Ballygunner, Liam Cahill, you cannot ignore that man. Like, I mean, this is just not possible.
He's working his way back into the top 50 anyway, so he might get a call to trials next year for 2021.
Yeah, so the semi-finals there, Ballygunner against Lismore, and then Mount Sion play Passage in the other semi-final. Funnily enough, a fella sent me a picture of Dan Shanahan. He must have come on. He had, I've never seen this before. I sent him a text to find out what it was all about, but he hasn't got back to me. He had a big number 10 and a big number 14 written on his calf muscles. Do you have any theory on what the hell that could have been? Now, number 10 and number 14 would probably be Dan's two favourite positions. But why would he have them written in big writing on the back of his calf muscles? Like, that's not for him. Is that for the goalkeeper behind him if he comes on a full forward? I'm a little bit, like, usually if somebody sends me a picture, I would just brush it off. But I'm intrigued as to what number 10 and number 14 written in very, very big writing down the back of his calves. Is that for his marker standing behind him? What is it for, Conan? Please help me.
Well, maybe it's exactly for that. If you were marking him now, like, you're really confused thinking about it. Like, what? Is it a tattoo?
No, they're not tattoos. They're written in like black marker.
Then it probably is just some sort of genius tactic to, like, you know, I don't know.
Sorry for just throwing that at you, Conan. That's kind of out of left field. I might try and find out the answer of that. Well, I will try and find out when Dan comes back to me for Thursday's show, if he'll tell me. So Down Club Football, it was all about comebacks. Caelan Mooney came back. That was his first game in championship action, 8.5 months after he got a really bad head injury. So he was assaulted on the street over Christmas, you know, I think himself and his brother. And, you know, he was in hospital after that. So he's back in competitive action. Pete McGrath said he's playing just as he did prior to the incident that occurred. As far as I'm concerned, he's back. He's just like every other player. So it's nice to see him. I'm a huge fan of Caelan Mooney. Fella, like Jack McCaffrey, Caelan Mooney, these fellas who have just come such blinding pace that when they get the ball, you'll just kind of instinctively get up off your seat.
He's electrifying, isn't he? He was told he was out for 6 months as well in December. So the way the season has fallen sort of suited him perfectly. Apparently, he was back training with everybody at the start of training again at the end of June. And actually, a nice sort of quirk about that game that they were playing Downpatrick. Ross Trevor was where Mooney's from, but his fiancée is from Downpatrick, and she's a physio for the other team. So he was very playing good against his fiancée. But apparently he's flying. Apparently he's even fitter as well. So, like, somebody in his club was telling me that endurance isn't always his big thing, which I was a bit surprised at. But he said he's always powerful, but he said his endurance is really high now at the minute.
Right, interesting that. I thought that would have improved in his time out in Australia, at least, because they do a lot of that endurance. Pete McGrath is obviously the Ross Trevor manager. We mentioned that on the show not so long ago. Cuckoo won well on Friday night. I think you were tweeting about Jerome Johnson's last goal, comparing it to Lewandowski. Dylan Keating, interestingly enough, from Ballymun Kickhams, had a similar goal, didn't he? Like, from 21, just to kind of a rocket into that bottom corner.
Yeah, like I don't know about you, but for me, 21 is not where you go for goals. Like that is just sort of, that's prime for the best goal scorers, like the real hitmen. I always have to be in the 13 before I start thinking about that. But Johnson's just like in the same, like you mentioned the Ballymun game, like Johnson just drills it, doesn't even hit the ground, just goes right into the bottom corner before it hits the ground. That's how you put it away.
That is how you put it away. I could never shoot from there. I'm the same. I actually, when I think about it, a terribly feeble shot. I was never a good goal scorer. And I think part of that reason is just a feeble, weak shot on me. Like, it just no kind of power behind it. Even, you know, like, you should be able to generate power off the outside of your boot, you know, off the laces.
Yeah.
I really need to catch it flush for it to whiz off it. I don't know why. I don't know why, but a really miserable, feeble. So when you see goals like that, it's like, wow, you know, that's really impressive. Another very impressive thing coming out of that game was Daryl O'Hanlon made a comeback. So he came on in the very last few minutes of that. And I hadn't realised Daryl O'Hanlon, like, we knew he was missing for Cuckoo last year, and he would have made a huge difference to their All-Ireland bid. But he's been out for 27 months. So this poor fella, this happens every now and then when you hear of a player that's been out that long and you wonder, geez, how did he get back? Yeah. So it started off with just a tight hamstring. This was a piece with him in the Irish News. I was reading. It started off with a tight hamstring. Then it kind of went up into his neck. Then there was pain shooting down his calf, and he was having to take painkillers just to get asleep. And he couldn't understand what it was. And it got to the point where it went down into his calf and his foot stopped working. He couldn't lift up his heel. So he knew there was something serious wrong with him, but he didn't know what it was. He was trying physios, chiropractors, osteopaths, all sorts of stuff, went to healers. And like, to be honest with you, I don't know what the hell he was doing all that for. The first thing I would do is go get an MRI scan. Like, I mean, he ended up after 5 months going for an MRI scan. And the MRI scan showed that he had a bulging disc close to the base of his spine. Like, would that not have been the right advice for poor Daryl O'Hanlon to get the MRI scan, you know, after a month, especially when it was kind of a mystery to the physios? What kind of physios was he going to, Conor, that weren't advising him on this?
Yeah, and I wonder where the healers thing came from and stuff as well. Like, the amount of alternatives that you can try without actually just... you would get the MRI scan first, and, you know, if it's all clear, then you can start looking at these other things because nothing else is working. But that seems a lot of waste of time and probably more damage done in the long run, like, you know, by not getting the MRI scan.
Yeah, unless it was the cost of it. Because, like, even, like, I've had a hamstring injury where I've known it's a hamstring injury and I was sent for an MRI scan to see the extent of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is something you don't know what it is. Like, an MRI scan for me is the obvious thing to do. Anyways, so they removed that disc after seeing he had the bulging disc. But because it went for so long as a bulging disc in pain, it had squashed the nerve altogether. So the pain in the last couple of months got really excruciating and worse because the bulging disc had completely destroyed one of his nerves. So he had to get another operation on that. So now this is pushing him back even further. So there's a huge risk involved to the operation to fix the nerve or take out the nerve, whatever he did. He ended up doing that. That became a success. Then he came back on June the 27th, 2019. This is after being almost 2 years out of the game. First comeback training session, he did his cruciate. Like, I mean, you're almost laughing saying it about at the bad luck. Not only did he do his cruciate, he destroyed it. He had torn his ACL. He did his medial ligament and he suffered a bone laceration. He needed a total knee reconstruction, a whole new knee. Another year. So now he's only made his comeback the other night against Mayo Bridge. Like, he's only 27. Like, he could only wish Dara the very best of luck, and hopefully that's all behind him now. That's horrific. 27 months.
So it's unbelievable. And like, it must be hard to be the same player, because you know him as a little jinky creative player, but coming back in your first session and doing something as freakish as your cruciate and needing the whole other reconstruction, never mind starting out your back and your neck, it's, geez, like, you wonder could you ever get to those same levels again. But fair play to him. It couldn't have been easy watching Kilcoo do so well and then lose the final in extra time and stuff, but he's back, and like, geez, you can only imagine the journey he's been on.
Yeah, the big three in Donegal all won easily. The big three in Donegal are obviously Kilcar, Niamh Connell and Guidoor. Guidoor won, yeah. Kilcar hammered Glen Squilly. That was Michael Murphy's club, which was surprising enough. They've obviously slipped back since they were able to win county finals. Niamh Connell, interestingly enough, hammered Termon. Now, you might say that's not interesting enough, but it is interesting. There was 6-18 to 8 points. Termon is only a small little town, and they won the minor championship last year, the minor A, and they got into an Ulster final. They were beaten by Lavie. So they obviously came up with a brilliant minor team to put 7 of them into the senior team against Niamh Connell, and the poor chaps were absolutely beaten out the gate. So you don't know, like, is that doing them any good? You could analyse that, say, well, there's their taste now of what it takes to be a proper senior player. You could go that route, or you could go, geez, those young lads will never be the same again after a beating like that. So I don't know which side you come down on.
Oh, I can only imagine how, like, Leo McLoone and Anthony Thompson would be treating those minors coming through. Like, you know, they'd be eating them up. Look, I think it's very early to throw that many people in, but I'd say in a small town like Termon, they've put all their eggs in this minor basket, and they've obviously got a really good team, and that's going to be the spine of their team for the next 10-15 years. And yeah, I'd say they probably will learn a lot from that, because now, you during the winter, this team is used to winning. All those players, they know now, like, the standard and the strength and conditioning level that they have to get up to, and they'll probably start making inroads towards doing that. Tough day for them, but it'll be good in the long run.
Tough day at the office. And here's a good stat coming out of that game. Niamh Connell scored 6 goals. 5 of their 6 goals came from defenders. Isn't that just pure Niamh Connell? Like, I mean, the only forward to score was Charles McGuinness. Anthony Thompson, Ethan O'Donnell, Kevin McGettigan, AJ Gallagher scored 2. Defenders, bizarre. 5 of 6 goals. The game's changing, Connell. The game's gone.
Anthony Thompson has always been in the vicinity for every goal scored that I can remember, especially for Donegal. He's just there lurking around. We talk about Kieran Malloy following every single play up to the end line. Anthony Thompson's the exact same. You watch those games against Dublin, he's always there to be, like, I think it was Ryan McHugh that scored him and Colin McFadden. Thompson is there as an option. The Michael Murphy goal in 2012, Thompson is there to pop it off to, but he's just there in the vicinity, so he's always following it in, and it's great to see he got his just rewards against Termon.
Yeah, well, you know, part of those tactics is that the defenders have license just to go, and that was it. Like, I mean, there's no doubt about that. Carrickmore are out in Tyrone. That's knockout, as we know. That's Conor Gormley, Martin Penrose's club. They're the 15-time champions. Killy Clocher beat them 2-13 to 2-10. No other huge storylines that I could see coming out of Tyrone. Armagh, Pierce Oak beat Madden. This was on Saturday. They got into the semi-finals on penalties. First time in the history of Armagh Championship has a game been decided on penalties. You know, Armagh's at knockout as well, which is a little bit disappointing for Armagh. Usually they run off a better club championship. So it was Paul Duffy. He was the hero. Pierce Oak, they won 5-3. Josh Sheridan missed for Madden. I don't know if you saw this penalty shootout. Sheridan tried to place it into the top corner, got under it and stuck it over the bar. So did the usual, you know, put the jersey up and covered his head, lifted the jersey up over and covered his head, you know, after missing it, you know, just completely distraught, a bit like the soccer players. Interestingly, Paul Duffy was brought back on at the end of extra time, knowing that it'd probably go to penalties, and he was brought back on and took the winning penalty. He's on the go, a veteran of 20 years, like I've already mentioned. So loads of drama in Armagh. Seemed like there was a good crowd at that as well. I know it's penalties, and I know the camera I was looking at from was in the stand close enough to the crowd, but there was a big, fairly big roar when this was going on. So history made in the Armagh Championship.
I saw somebody was doing a Facebook Live, and they ran around behind the goals for the penalties. And you can just hear someone like effing and blinding that. There must have been a steward telling him to get away from behind the goals. No one was allowed behind the goals. And he was shouting, saying, it's Facebook Live. It's like, I don't give a fuck, get out of the way. And you just see him go, fuck's sake. And the phone goes back down to the ground and he walks away.
It's, county board officers all protecting their live streaming. There's no doubt about that. If that was advertised, went to penalties, you could get an extra 20 people paid a fiver to watch the penalties. So we're not going to let any Facebook Lives go out there. John Horan had an interview in the Irish Independent on Saturday, and he said that he would like to see all inter-county games conclude by early August, very similar to what the GPA have asked, and he wants the season split, right? So he's also advocating now ending the April club window. Now, are we being finally vindicated on this show? Or, like, I mean, this is constant on this show that April for club is a complete waste of time. You're having to train for two seasons in one season for club players. The split season has always been our favoured structure, even though, you know, we've talked about potentially how it would work doing it, you know, one after another. It doesn't work. They all talk about focus. So now John Horan is on this ballgame. I think he sent the fixtures task committee back to try and see how they can make this work. If you're going to run a season from February until the end of March, what better way to do that than to make the league your championship and play the provincials before that? It fits perfectly into that time frame, Conan. There's no messing around. And this is what can save the whole GAA season. Everybody's on board. And again, it's all my idea.
I'm not going to agree with you on that one, but I'm happy that you got your soapbox to push your championship restructure plan again.
But that's it. Now, it's interesting finally that the penny is landing with all these people with the split season, because there's always opposition to these kind of things. And when people then actually see it and see it working and see that county players are with their clubs and it's exclusive and it's all great, people just oppose things for no reason, don't they? Like, I mean, it's very frustrating. And now that they've seen it and seen it working, now everybody seems to be on the line that this split season works an awful lot better.
There's also been a lot of mad stuff that's been proposed, though, and, like, you know, like, how many arguments have we had about, say, rule changes and stuff like that? Like, if I'm imposing something, I know you think I'm a doomsday merchant, but, like, I'm always just looking for somebody to give me a proper reason for doing it without just jumping straight into it. And, like, the split season, I never really saw a problem with that. I always thought it was mad that you were taking a month in April when you could just shift the season up by a month instead of just taking a whole month. And, like, that made the club championship worse as well, because some players didn't play because they have a championship coming up in May. And, like, you just weren't a club championship pace either. It was April. You were, like, 2 months into your season. So, no, like, this makes way more sense. And it also, like, I think that's what Ashley McConville said or John Horne said. It's like it gives people a chance to see the club players. And then that sort of builds appetite going into county, because now we're talking about more Shanahan, how well he's playing. It's a more natural sort of evolution into the county team then when you're watching all the club games first.
Yeah, well, that's one thing now. So Oisín Ó Conmhaille agrees with that. Oisín Ó Conmhaille wants to see, I think he was on RT somewhere. He said, I would like to see the clubs get the start of the year with the inter-county to follow. We can build a season and hopefully have something that we'll have this year. But maybe not as late in the year. The club scene has got a new lease of life since we resumed lockdown, etc., etc. Now, I don't agree with the club season coming first, because I think it's messy. You have the situation up in Donegal. You have the situation in other counties. That county team is still training. You still have the situation where, you know, the inter-county season on the horizon of the county players and them being slightly distracted by that. Like, I mean, if the club comes second, there is nothing. The county players can just finish their county season and then 100% give their focus to the club without any distractions for the rest of the year. I don't see the logic in putting the clubs first when there is a slight conflict of interest. Whereas if the club comes second, there is no conflict of interest. And plus, people are talking about putting the club first, like Oisín. Like, if there's an All-Ireland provincial championships and All-Ireland club championships, like, I mean, when does the inter-county season start then at that rate? Like, I mean, you can start the club season and play it to a finish from the start of August right through to the end of November. And I'd say that would all fit in. Unless he obviously wants it to do the other way around, where the club season gets the first 4 months and then the inter-county season starts at the 1st of July. I don't know about that.
No, that's a fair point, because I wasn't even thinking about, you know, the All-Ireland Championship in the club scene as well. You could just finish that off in November, like you say. And there would be a good buzz coming back from club as well. Like, so if you were off the first half of the year, like, and it solves the exam problems in May. It solves, like, people in college. You're coming back and you start training again in June, July. Like, you know, you're coming into a club season in August. It would be a good bit of a buzz for that. More people home.
Yeah, well, that's it. But, like, I mean, club would play away with their league the whole way through the inter-county season. It's not like club players would have nothing to do. They would just be building up for it. You know, they would be playing their league games with a view of starting playing championship, you know, in August. And look, to be honest, the only two counties that wouldn't have their club players until August is the All-Ireland finalists. Everybody else would have them training during July. Some would have them as early as June. Like, it would be a great deal for the club players. Like, for the majority of counties, you're having most of your club players from July right through to the end of November. Like, isn't that what everybody's crying out for?
Yeah, no, it is. Let's make it happen.
What do you make of the Leitrim decision to put their semi-finals and finals behind closed doors? I couldn't believe this when I heard it in the car. Like, I mean, so this is in order to prevent putting club officials and county officials in a near impossible situation as regards who will gain access to the limited number of golden tickets. So what they've ended up doing, instead of saying let 100 people in, they're letting no one in and they're putting it on the streaming. What kind of an idiotic decision is this? Is 100 not better than nothing? Do the players not deserve some atmosphere at a county semi-final and a county final? And if you want to know who deserves to get the tickets, family and friends of the players. And now nobody can complain. Can Johnny up in the pub complain about one of the players' fathers and mothers getting a ticket ahead of him? What kind of logic is going into this decision?
I don't know. And I don't get how zero. I know where they're coming from. They want to be fair to everybody, but how is zero better than 200 people at a game? Like, you know, I was at a game on Saturday and it was a good atmosphere still, even though there's only 120, 130 fans. Like, you know, it's a championship match and you're there roaring the team on, you're applauding them, you're getting on to the ref. You still fall back into that and stuff that you feel like a good championship match needs as well. And I was actually thinking, geez, the ref is so bad, thank God some of us were there to put him under a bit of pressure. Like, you know, yeah. Little stuff like that. I'd hate to be watching that at home. But I'm not going to shit on the Sunday paper review, because I know we'll get into that afterwards. But Michael Dignan made a really good point about, you know, they had six games in that period of lockdown, and he equated that to 1,200 people getting to go to a match if that's 200 people going to a game, which is a really nice line. Like, you know, and if you're talking about semi-finals and finals across different levels, senior, intermediate, like, you're over 1,000, maybe 2,000 people are still getting to go to a game, which is really important, and it's way better than nothing. And I just think it's mad that the least densely populated county in Ireland is the one taking the lead on this.
It's such a stupid theory. And I'm telling you one thing, if I had a son playing in a county final and I was told to come home and watch that on a laptop on a streaming service, I would lose my mind. I would get over a fence. It wouldn't happen. I would be going to that match. Like, I mean, it's outrageous that they've prevented family members from not seeing their own family members on the biggest day in their club careers. Like, it's just so stupid. Give every player two tickets each. And there you go. And the owl stock down in the pub will just have to understand that. Like, I mean, that they have to allow the family in. And if there's some tickets left over, Johnny, that's been a stalwart from the club all his life, come on down, you're a good man, you can come in now, because there's one or two left over from immediate family that might not want them. So, like, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Emily Mulligan was given out on Twitter. He said, it's viewed as being the fairest solution to all concerned to allow access to no supporters. Would love to see our clubs take a stance on this and take on the county board. Clubs weren't even consulted on this matter. Bullshit, he said. Like, I mean, you know, this is a decision being made, I don't know, like, I mean, without any logic as far as I'm concerned. And to think that the clubs involved hadn't even, you know, the decency to say, are ye okay with that? How will that go down? Like, I mean, who's the county board to say how a club will deal with this situation themselves? This is not a county game. This is the county board dictating to clubs that they can't divvy out the tickets as they see fit. This is not a county board issue as such. This is a club issue.
I got sent a picture from Clonoe Coal Island in the Tyrone Championship, and the night before, some people had apparently taken out some bits of steel from the fence.
I saw that.
They could all sneak into the game, but that sort of shows you the appetite. And, like, I didn't even think of that angle you're talking about there. If your son was playing on it, and like if you were that son as well playing in your first ever county final, Jesus, you'd want your parents there or your brother or somebody coming down to witness it happen and to celebrate with afterwards.
And to hug them after the game, exactly. Interestingly, I saw that picture, I was doing the rounds on WhatsApp, but this was just an iron bar taken out of a fence. It could have been anywhere in the world. There was actually no proof that this was even at a GA ground, or did you see different pictures than me?
I just got a very reliable source in there.
Yeah, exactly. There was nothing. There was two pictures and it was just a generic steel fence with one piece moved to the side. And you're supposed, like, I was thinking, this, what is this?
In the darkness as well.
No, there was one in the dark. There was one of them in the dark. Yeah. What was that? What teams were they supposed to be? Just so we go, this is not absolute concrete fact that this was either of these two clubs.
It was Clonoe and Coal Island, big derby on Loch Ness up there. I think it was Friday night the game was. So the incident was apparently taking place on Thursday night.
Right, right, okay. If you're to believe WhatsApp pictures anyways. But sure, look, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Who are we to say? Right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with the newspaper review. There's some decent enough stuff in that.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst. And I mean, I'd really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
All right, the newspaper review, Conan. We're going to start with the Sunday Indo, as usual, and start with Colm O'Rourke, as usual. And he's talking about, the headline on this is, "Time to wake up and smell the roses as we get a glimpse of the future." The sub-headline on this is, "GAA at central level should now be borrowing a minimum of $100 million, repaid over a 50-year period." So he gets into that, pretty much the pieces about county expenses and how county boards won't be able to afford anything next year. He says, "We're likely to go back to a more pure form of amateurism, or else counties that do not have a big sponsor will just show up for games without much preparation. Those counties whose sponsors have deep pockets will still get the best, thus exaggerating the gap between the rich and poor. A county team now may have to trim." This is actually very similar to what we talked about last Thursday. On the back of the county board chairman talking about it, we're having a bit of a laugh about how they're going to have to trim it all down. I still think Colm O'Rourke listens to the show, but I can't. I've done definite proof on it. A county team may now have to trim all the extras to survive. It will be interesting if some county boards tell their players that there will be no travelling expenses, no extra gear, no meals after training, and the management team will be slimmed down to a manager and a few selectors. You can't do without a doctor or physio, as you must look after injuries and the general well-being of players. So again, a lot of kind of similar stuff to what we're saying, like I said, about the backroom team is going to be slimmed down and what players are going to have to give up on. And I'm always a defender of players, and that players deserve the best and they deserve their mileage, they deserve their catering, all those things that cost a lot of money. But my argument for why they deserve those are the money they generate for the GAA. But this is a very unusual year. Inter-county players will be generating nothing this year because of crowd restrictions. So if I'm to follow my argument through, well, then inter-county players have to take a big hit this year because they're not generating anything, and they'll have to forego their mileage expenses. And I remember lots of times when I was playing with Laois, if we weren't getting fed, I was probably lucky enough that we trained in Port Laois. I'd drive across to my mother's house. She'd have the dinner on in the evenings anyway. She'd make me an extra one. I'd eat it and I'd go on back up to Dublin. You need something to eat, or else just pay it all down to the players that have long commutes ahead of them and get something. But that's it. If there's no money there, inter-county players are just going to have to take a big hit this year and probably next year too.
They are, but like the county teams and county boards, you're really just going to have to look at how they're running their teams as well. Like, I know everyone's trying to catch up with Dublin, and it wasn't made easy because Dublin got a lot of money given to them. But that's also why it's really urgent as well. We talked about this on Thursday, that the sponsorship money needs to be looked at and made fair and equal. Like, we can't just have a situation where a big sponsor like AAG, you're just bankrolling Dublin while everybody else is on their knees. Because I'm looking at it thinking, like, you could, like, potentially for a couple of years, like, cut costs. Like, you don't need a squad of 40, say. You cut that down to 25, because I agree. Like, getting rid of meals and the catering and stuff would be a bit extreme, especially if you're traveling down to training. So, but like, you don't need to feed 40, 50 people. You can feed 25 or whatever it is, and that's saving money every night. Could you get rid of strength and conditioning? Like, you know, not to say that that's not needed, but like, do you know enough now at this stage, or would you have a coach who can be multifunctional and help with your strength and conditioning rather than outsourcing it or using a gym or whatever you're doing? And even video analysis as well, I was thinking about, because those programs are really expensive. Like, can you look at a cheaper way of doing that the way a lot of clubs do it, you know, when you still get a lot of the benefits from it? Like, you could just be a bit smarter, a bit stingier, really, but it can be done, and you can still operate at that level. But as long as it's not just Dublin who are able to keep operating at the same level, that obviously wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's exactly. He says, my point is that a lot of young people who are part of county squads would not die of hunger if they were not fed before and after training on match days. You know, like, I mean, it is true. They always used to be able to do without it in the past. But, you know, like, I mean, definitely we're agreeing that the players that have commutes should be getting fed. He says, in one way, this pandemic, and this is like the sub-headline, in one way, this pandemic offers an opportunity. The GAA at Central Council level should be borrowing a minimum of 100 million to finance the upgrading of a number of county grounds. Money will never be as cheap and should be borrowed over 50 years like they do in Australia. Improve the facilities, but don't let the money be a noose around your neck either. That sort of a capital expenditure would do wonders for local economies. Yeah, I don't know. County grounds being upgraded, I don't think that's a huge priority. I see loads of county grounds around the country. O'Moore Park's one of them, O'Connor Park's another. They've been upgraded, they're modern, they're at 15,000 capacity, and the biggest game they get is a county final, which has about feckin' 3,000 at the most. O'Moore Park's never full. It's a terrible waste of money. It's too big. It's too big, and it very rarely gets inter-county games, and the lower level inter-county games that it gets will not fill it either. So, like, I mean, I don't think that if they want to borrow money over 50 years like Colm O'Rourke is suggesting, and that seems like a good idea when money is going to be very cheap, considering the recession that we're facing, why not use it on more important things than upgrading county grounds? I honestly think it's a terrible waste of money having so many county grounds around the country, and never, ever will they be full.
I think you called it an ego trip before, and it was
Parky Quay. Which one? Parky Quay, was it? No, yeah, I think it was O'Connor Park, maybe. Yeah, and yeah, Parky Quay. There's too many of them.
Mm. And like, I like Colm O'Rourke's use of the phrase, like, having it as a noose around your neck, trying to, you know, pay back all this money that you're spending. And you only have to look across to the soccer world and see, like, how badly the Aviva Stadium hit the Irish soccer team. And like, I know there's a lot of other stuff going on there as well, but that was a big basis of where all the trouble started happening, because they got so much money and investment they put into this class stadium. But it's like, you know, how often is it going to be full? And like, at least they do get to fill it sometimes. But yeah, it's mad to think of all those ones around the country.
Yeah, so there's also a piece in the Sunday Independent. It's from Jerry McEntee. And this is a rebuttal. This is a reply to Tommy Conlon, who wrote a piece about Sean Boylan last week. A lot of people in Meath didn't really like that. Joe Brawley didn't like that. Like, I mean, I don't see any harm in the piece that Tommy Conlon wrote at all. Like, I mean, if people are constantly looking for balance and all this kind of thing, that, like, I mean, no one can have a strong opinion that might not be necessarily right anymore. So the headline in this is, there is no darkness to be glimpsed behind a sunny facade. Subheadline is, former Meath captain Jerry McEntee insists Tommy Conlon's memory of Gaelic football over the last 40 years is tainted. So it's just a defence, really. I think it's a wishy-washy defence, if I'm being honest. Jerry McEntee says, there's no enigma, Mr. Conlon. What you see is what you get, a true gentleman. Never did I once hear him vilify any of the opposition, and never once did he encourage assault and battery, as Conlon suggested. If his players overstepped the mark, and sometimes they did, myself included, they did so of their own volition, but never could it be attributed to the influence of Sean. I don't think anybody is thinking, maybe Conlon, you know, cheekily was insinuating it in some little way. I think he was more insinuating that even if Sean Boylan didn't send them out like that, when they were dirty, he didn't seem to put a stop to it. I think that was more Conlon's suggestion than anything else. It finished up is, Sean is a wonderful human being, if anyone who knows him well will verify, and I think anybody would have that same opinion. He says, and kind of compares what Conlon said about Kerry and uses one or two kind of examples to try and paint Kerry as potentially a dirty team, which they wouldn't have been. It wasn't much of a comeback, I didn't think, Conlon. I don't know what your thoughts on it were.
I'm blinded by my love for Jerry McEntee, though.
Some man to fetch a ball.
Oh, my God. But are we comparing to Patsy Bradley? That's how highly we were speaking. But I still like the idea of him coming out. And, it started off strong, the way he was, referring to him as Mr. Conlon. And, it seemed a little bit snipey. And you're right, he didn't go into too much detail. I did like that he talked about, the players at that stage. They had to do things to win, and this is what was happening in the game, and that was natural then for the players to react to what was happening, and we took it on ourselves and whatever else, and that's probably true, but I still think Conlon was right. His biggest point was how disappointed he was in the documentary, that they didn't even broach the subject, or he didn't ask a question or talk to anybody about, or even ask Sean Boylan himself. So I think Conlon was still right to do it. But also, what I think was good from Conlon's piece is that it got a reaction from a player at the time who is now talking about it, and even if it's wishy-washy, he started a conversation about it.
Oh, exactly. And I say to Sunday Indo, we're only delighted to actually have a piece from Jerry McEntee in response to a piece they had from one of their own writers. So that's exactly what you want, you know what I mean, to be starting the conversation. Dermot Crowe has a piece, it's Total Dominance Can Sap Belief of the Downtrodden. Even the greatest teams won't last forever, but that's all opponents can cling to until that day finally dawns. He's talking about Cora Finn's domination in Galway mostly. He talks about Cross McGlenn's domination in Armagh, and just finishes up giving Port Laoise a mention about their dominance in Laois. And I suppose, I don't know, it's an all right piece. It's nothing too special. He talks to Kevin Johnson, Mayo's Ballintubber, who lost narrowly to Cora Finn. He talks to Outerard, their manager Tommy Finnerty, about coming up and playing them, and just a bit about their domination. And he also has a good piece about Paddy Dial, who died last Monday. So if you get a chance, all these pieces are online now. And you probably have to pay for them on the Independent. So in the Sunday Times, we have Michael Foley is talking about students to masters. Dublin's class of 95 has produced an extraordinary generation of coaches. And he talks about, of the 18 players who got game time when Dublin won the 1995 All-Ireland title, 9 have been involved in as managers or selectors at senior level at senior inter-county management level. Farrell, Clark, Jim Gavin, Jason Sherlock, Mick Deegan, Mick Galvin, John O'Leary, Paul Beale and Pat Gilroy. Paul Curran, he managed Ballymun Kickham, so he's involved with at club level. Only Galway's 1998 team with 7 former players having managed at intercounty level get close. I don't know, I suppose when you look at it, you have Jim Gavin, you have Desi Farrell, and you have Pat Gilroy. They're the 3 big ones. And if you've got 3 managers, Conlon, what's the natural thing for them to do? To bring in a selector from their old, playing days. So then you've got 3 managers from the same team. They pick 1 or 2 selectors each. So now you're up, now you're up to your 9.
Yeah, and how many times, not saying that any of these selectors were that, but how many times is a selector brought in who's an old teammate just doesn't really have a clue or doesn't really care too much about managing the team? But then that's on their portfolio, and they might pick up a job then along the way. Yeah, it is a natural thing to do, but it is still impressive when I was reading through some of the stuff that they've all gone on to do, and even John O'Leary going from Wicklow to ladies teams and winning All-Irelands with them. And
I think he got the ladies to the final in 2004. I don't think he won an All-Ireland, because when they won it recently, they had a big drought. Paul Beelan obviously went along and managed a few different counties. It's Paul Clark who we're talking about having stepped down recently. He also has a piece. I don't see it being unbelievably impressive. It's obviously, it's not supposed, I don't mean that it's not impressive. I just think it's easily explainable. they're looking after, friends of theirs that they played with. And that's just, it happens to have been 3 managers from that team getting in their own lads off the same team, So I don't see anything incredible about it, if you know what I mean.
Until you see 7 of them managing and having success as managers, then you're going to hold fire.
Yeah, exactly. So he has another piece then. The logic behind restructure of the season doesn't make it any easier to achieve. agreeing to explore a split season is only the start of a long, difficult process for the GA. He's talking about John Horan's comments in the Irish Independent, and we've kind of covered this already. He says, the reality isn't subscribing. The experience of playing club games without the encumbrance of inter-county training and games for most players over the past few weeks has been like letting spring calves loose out into an open field. He said, and then he's talking about any concerns around further loss of media coverage, having pulled the inter-county season back from September, have eased given the relative resilience of the club in an inter-county game against competing forces in the past 2 years. I'm always of the opinion that this scaremongering that goes on about, you know, you move the club game out of August or September, we'll lose all that promotion. I say, whatever about the club early rounds, Conan, because we're in agreement that there isn't a huge national interest around early rounds in the club. There probably is a bit more this year because of the, you know, the year that we're after having. But absolutely, when all county finals, and I've said this 101 times, and I think this is the way it will go. When the split season starts and all counties start in August at the same time, and everybody knows that every county is finishing up then mid to late September, that in October and November, we will have Sunday game type shows based on provincial and All-Ireland club series, because it's massive. It's really enjoyable. And I know from the show here, and you know yourself, that those games do capture the national interest, not like inter-county, but I think they have the potential to.
Definitely. And like that idea of trying to find the right calendar for the club players, otherwise people won't care, is nonsense, because I don't know the exact TV figures, but I'd say the highest for the club game is around November, December, when the best of each county are taking on each other in
definitely.
The provinces.
Yeah. And if you put all our semi-finals and finals straight after that, when the momentum is still going, yeah, you know, when everybody's involved in it, don't take an 8, bloody 10, 12 week break and then throw them on in the middle of the inter-county season, you would have massive viewing figures for that semi-final and final. Really, really big, with the All-Ireland finals just before Christmas and, you know, in the middle of December, and everybody in kind of, you know, Christmas mood, let's say. And, you know, I really think that there's a massive, massive opportunity for, you might lose 2 months in August and September, but you will gain October, November and a bit of December.
I agree. And I'm just always very weary of the, it's too easy to talk about the club being on its knees, like, you know, and the county being to blame for that. Like, most clubs don't have county panels. You know, if you go through every single county, most clubs don't. You know, so it's not like, it's a great thing seeing all these county players back playing, and it's great for them to be able to train without having to worry about training with the county as well. But like, the game is fine, especially at club level. Like, and that's testament to it, the fact that November, December still attracts a national audience and national stories. And wherever we put it, we can definitely like work it better in the year, it will still be a success.
Yeah, exactly. So in the Irish Mail on Sunday, we have a big, big long piece by Michael Deignan. His tagline is "The Vice of Hurling." The headline is, "I'm normally very positive, but it went to ground. I was shattered and so disappointed." He's talking about the lockdown in Laois, Offaly and Kildare. Well, he's talking about the lockdown in Offaly. I wouldn't say he gives a shit about the lockdown in Laois and Kildare, no more than I do about Offaly and Kildare. And Kildare looks to be completely screwed. We're hoping in Laois that we get ours lifted. It would be great to have it lifted Friday so we get another weekend of games. But I would say these people are like, again, you know, they're just going to stick to what they originally said, even though the cases in Laois are way down the last week. And that's not a result of the lockdown. So, yeah, it's a big, long piece. It's almost like a bit like a diary entry, isn't it, Conan? Like, it's almost like what he's been doing, and there's nothing too exciting in it. Then I suppose he gets to the finances, which may be a little bit more interesting. He says, we've an awful lot of people going through the gates. We'd have roughly 26 adult matches in football and 21 in hurling. So you'd be surprised how quickly the gate receipts would add up. So now you have a county board chairman talking about the finances. For that to be taken away when the crowd limit didn't go up was the first blow. That has prompted a big discussion about where the funding for any inter-county is going to be sourced. There's certainly massive implications. We don't know how much money we're getting from the government, and we don't know how the GAA at national level plan to distribute it. This is going to come into focus. How that's done fairly and equitably is another day's work. You know, so like, I mean, he's obviously talking about the money issue. He goes on to say money is one issue. At this point in Offaly, we wouldn't be in the best position to recommence inter-county training without proper finance coming in. We would if we didn't have to pay anybody. But it wouldn't be in favour of asking players and management and everyone involved to forego basics such as mileage, expenses and food that the players fought very hard to get. Even though we genuinely don't have the money, there has to be funding made available, or it will likely reach a stage where you'll have to pull the plug. So that, I thought that was the most important, most interesting thing. County Board Chairman talking about pulling the plug on inter-county.
You said it being like a diary entry as well. Yeah, it's just a really nice sort of human piece, and you got to see his side of it, like, and how much he's done to try and get it back lifted again, and then just to have a kick in the teeth. And then he's very real fears about that. And I'd say probably the most frustrating thing, and I know that you've talked about this, but he was talking about an athlete, there hasn't been a case in the GAA, so we're very well on top of all that. And it probably shows as well how important it is, at the very least, for the county game to go ahead, though. Like, I know his sort of back and forward there was like, can you pay them or can you ask them to not be like giving their expenses just now or whatever, but the GAA needs money, and the way to do that best is for a county game, and hopefully later in the year to be allowed to have bigger crowds, and that can help every county. And geez, like, could they even start looking again at a better structure, like just to bring in more money, never mind anything else? No ulterior motive. Can awfully be guaranteed 3 or 4 games so that they can get a crowd of 3 or 4 games to everywhere? I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's going to be knockouts, so they're not going to do that. He has a bit of a touch at Micheál Martin. I know Taoiseach Micheál Martin's son is involved in Nemo Rangers, but to hear that he didn't realise the 200 crowd limit included players, officials, was dispiriting to say the least, that the Taoiseach didn't even know that, and practically hinted that that's going to change, and then didn't change. So you just have to wonder how much influence Micheál Martin has when it comes to making these decisions, or are they just going so scared by the medical, advice that they can't balance it out? You know, it doesn't seem to be any deaths as far as I can see anymore. It's all young people getting it and they're not dying. So for me, without being a medical expert here, Colin, because everyone's a medical expert these days, is it not make more sense to tell all the old people and vulnerable people year lockdown? Everybody else isn't. Would that not make more sense? And if you live with family members and your family member lives with an old person or a person that is vulnerable, and they choose to go out and they choose to take the risk of bringing that back into their house, is that not their own personal responsibility that they have to be responsible for? Why is the answer always lockdowns where everybody suffers? I'm starting to get a little bit frustrated by it, Conor. There has to be another answer to this.
Old people are people too, will they? Like,
but listen, the old people doesn't change. We're all locked down. They just become locked. They just stay that way, and everybody else that it's not going to kill can go on about their lives. Or else
What about for Mickey Hart? Can he not come out and manage their own while he's locked down and everybody else is carrying on?
He'll have to wear a gas mask. He'll have to wear full PPE equipment, or he could do it over a Zoom call or something like that. I didn't think about poor Mickey Hart. The Philip Langan or Lanigan has a piece as well with Tom Cribben. Don't have too much time to go into that. Tom Cribben is fairly pessimistic. Like, I mean, it depends on the person's outlook on these things and their, levels of worry or what kind of, way they want to put it. He says, I find it very hard to see the county going ahead this year, he says. I think they would be better off concentrating on club because it's very important for underage in particular. I've probably never seen as many club players training. They've really missed it when they couldn't have it. I don't see the benefit of not having it, and the club has been decided. I don't think the GAA could go now and say we're scrapping inter-county and continuing on with the provincial clubs. Maybe they could. I don't know. It just seems a little bit old, a bit late in the day for that. A little bit late in the day for that argument. He goes on then and makes a good point about Kildare, Laois and Offaly. He said we shouldn't panic and try to force an inter-county thing into a 6 or 8 week period into November, December, when the weather will probably be very poor. People wouldn't enjoy going to matches as much. I think we should take our time, run the club scene properly, and let counties and Croke Park recess financially. Make sure we're on a strong financial footing for next year. Then he talks about the Kildare thing. He says the county players, they're enjoying their football at the moment. If we weren't trying to rush the club scene off in a matter of weeks, I think they'd actually enjoy it more. We probably should get to the end of September, October with the club scene, with a lot of players still playing. If we're going into next year as a normal year, most county players will be back, nearly starting back in November anyway. His argument is obviously to continue the club season until October, November and start afresh next year. Look, to be honest, which is not the worst argument in the world, if the club continued on and pushed the inter-county to next year, especially with all the county boards complaining about money. But what you wouldn't want is for the inter-county to be scrapped and for us not to finish out the club provincial and All-Ireland series.
Like, you know, the inter-county isn't starting until, what, Halloween or something like that? Like, the club can carry on if it wants, but just without the county players. Like, get your championship done before the time you're told to get it done, and you can keep playing if you want. Like, Tom Cribbett also said it was important to keep the club game going for underage reasons because it's very important for them, but it's also important for them to be watching the best on TV and seeing their county play and, like, you know, being inspired by that. So I didn't really agree too much with that. And, like, if the county game's playing in November, December, I don't see how that's really impacting underage club GA.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, like, I'm finally getting to the bloody part where he talks about Leash, Offaly and Kildare being disadvantaged. Obviously, Leash, Offaly and Kildare, their club championship have been put back, so their championships are going to be pushed on in to October, potentially. So the county team is not going to have, you know, county semi-finalists, finalists. So it's definitely going to affect Leash, Kildare and Offaly's preparation for the Leinster Championship. Will it make any bit of posy odds in the Leinster Championship, which Dublin is going to win very, very easily anyways? Probably not. It would probably be a bigger story if it was three Ulster counties, because don't we know Conn and Ulster still think they have a very competitive championship up there.
But it is as well that the fact of straight knockout, yeah, is really harsh. And we talked about, say, like Leash are playing Louth and Longford, who play each other the week before, and they'll have the benefit of league games. Going into a straight knockout, Leash won't have a chance to recover. They'll be out if they lose, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So we get on to the Sunday World just to finish up. And we have Pat Spillane, our old friend who never disappoints. I actually enjoyed his piece this week. He has a nice day.
I hated it.
He has a nice, well, I like the way I like when Splan's out for blood. Sometimes I think he's too political these days, and like he has a nice little cut at the Ulster.
By the way.
Well, that's why you didn't like it, right? So he says, he starts off talking about the government. It's a little mishmash of everything, a bit like Pat Spillane pieces. So the headline is Cara Finn Keep Us Believing. They never brag about their achievements or lecture other clubs and how the game should be played. And then says, Kingpins make a mockery of spoofers and reap the full rewards by focusing on football's core skills. So I saw you tweeting about this. That he says he's talking about Cara Finn anyways, and he says they've never got the recognition they deserve for their achievements or the quality of football they play. Unfortunately for them, their period of dominance has ran parallel to Dublin's amazing run at All-Ireland level, and they have grabbed most of the spotlight. I don't agree with that at all. I don't know, does Pat Spillane read the media or like listen to shows or anything? I don't think anybody has any doubt how brilliant Cara Finn are. I think they have got huge amount of credit. I don't think it's anything to do with Dublin's dominance, because one happens in March and the other happens in September. I do think that having the All-Ireland final mixed in with the Inter-County League absolutely affects the amount of coverage they potentially could have gotten, though.
Yeah, potentially, but like that's the thing. Everybody in Ireland respects and they talk and they laud Cara Finn. Like, you know, they haven't gone under the radar, and that's what I was tweeting about. It seemed like that Splan had just heard about them recently, and he thought he would tell us all about this amazing team that he's heard about in Galway. And, you know, he's going through the stats again. Like, you don't need to do that. Everybody knows the whole Cara Finn team. Everyone aspires to Cara Finn, and like part of the reason as well, like I know like the Ulster thing was strange. Like, he just had a real bee in his bonnet about an entire province, but and the article was a mess. You mentioned that going from Neffit to Cara Finn to Ulster, but he was talking like about Cara Finn being the antidote to things like stats and analysis and strength and conditioning, like as if Cara Finn don't engage with any of that stuff. Like the Ard manager was in one of those pieces in the Sunday papers, and he was talking about the strength and conditioning of Cara Finn, and that was the big difference that he noticed between them and every other team that they've ever played. Like, Cara Finn are almost a professional outfit, and they think that they're just playing the game and kicking the ball and going home on a Tuesday and Thursday is insane from Pat Spillane.
No, it is. And then he says, essentially, they're a club version of Dublin, and that's the biggest accolade I can bestow on them. The only comparison there really is more the dominance and the brilliance, but Cara Finn play a much more kicking game than Dublin. Like, I mean, Dublin, when Jim Gavin took over first, you might compare a bit more to Cara Finn, but Cara Finn kicked the ball an awful lot more than Dublin.
I just wonder, though, if Dublin had the opportunity, like the Cardiff do. You know, Dublin did kick the ball. They were the big entertainers, and teams just got more and more defensive against them. Like, I still think when the pass is on, they move it as fast as they can. Yeah. But they just don't always have that chance. And especially at club level, like, there's going to be way more gaps than Cardiff in just exploited.
Yeah, maybe. So this is the part I did like. So he's talking about Cardiff Finn never bragging about their achievements or lecturing other clubs on how the game should be played. Their attitude contrasts sharply with their GAA brethren in Ulster, who at county level have a habit of lecturing the rest of us on how Gaelic football should be played. After Down became the first county to bring Sam Maguire across the border, they suggested that they were the first county to introduce tactics into Gaelic football. This is back in the 60s now. The late Joe Lennon was quoted as saying Kerry football was 10 years behind the times. Since their breakthrough success in 1960, Down has won 4 more All-Ireland titles, the last coming 26 years ago. In that period, behind the times, Kerry have won 18 titles. So I like the way he's... I have no problem with that. In the wake of Armagh's breakthrough win in 2002, they told us that their success was all about physicality, use of defensive system, and the deployment of psychologists. I'm not sure Armagh told us that. That was the analysis, you know? And then he talks about Tyrone. In their All-Ireland victory in 2003, Tyrone went a step further with their swarm defences allied to a running game as they introduced a new word, transition, to GA lexicon. In fairness, Tyrone did win 3 more titles. Listen, he's just out for blood. I don't mind anyone who's ever just out for blood and he's settling a few old scores that he's pissed off. Because I do think Pat Splann is trying to appease everybody now rather than... I liked him when he was public enemy number one against the Ulster counties, because they didn't like to hear it, but he wasn't that far wrong about Ulster being a more defensive... It's true, it's a more defensive province than the rest. I know Ulster counties try to say that other provinces do it as well, and they're right. But Jesus, there for 5 or 6 years, Ulster football was absolutely desperate stuff.
Probably longer. Like I would agree with that. But I don't think that anybody in Ulster lectures anybody. I think actually the reason Ulster is so defensive is because they're not brash enough to come out and brag about how great they are. They just close up shop. And I don't know, apart from your mate and Down, like he's taking the courses, and everyone seems to like hate seeing his face popping up. Like, I don't think anybody's coming out and talking about how great Ulster is and how much it's far better. I actually think you said it's a settling old scores. I just think it's probably a hang-up from that great Kerry team who lost to Armagh, lost to Tyrone, lost to Down even, and Donegal in big games, and he probably just hasn't gotten over that.
Maybe. That's a nice way to leave it, yeah. But he actually brought up the fact that Kerry beat them in the All-Ireland final in 2014, an ageing Kerry side. he was trying to put the boot into McGuinness. Yeah, he really went for Ulster. It's like the old school Pat Spillane. Bring him back, that's what I say. Right, we'll leave it there, Colin. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Thursday, as usual, and we'll have an interview for you, and we will look ahead to the club matches as well as a bit of news. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.